going to start within a minute. We're 9:28 now. That's 2 minutes to the meeting. Good morning.
Good morning.
Recording in progress.
Good morning, Slav.
Yes, I hope I'm audible enough. We have a sizable number of presence in the meeting, the members of the standing committee, the AG and their team as well in attendance. The meeting is on the basis of getting full a brief on the strategy by the Auditor General, something which honorable members, we have been advised of in a number of sessions that we've had with the Office of the Auditor General, even when we were in a visit in the office. The documents have been with us for a couple of days, which is a plus in terms of the detail that it carries. Nevertheless, the actual attendance begins to inform us that we have a quorum, except if there are any other people who have asked to be excused for not part of the meeting. I've met Honorable Singh yesterday, who has an indication that he is attending one crucial meeting today, which is making him to be absent in the meeting. I don't know whether is there any other apology. In the same instance, I think we must congratulate Mr. Mkhaji, who has been appointed in a senior position as the manager, which recognized this his contribution in the institution. And in absence of Mr. Peter Paul, we have Mr. Dumezweni, who has been assigned in the committee as a secretary. I think we must appreciate and thank Osis Ntombi from SCOPA, who has been doubling up, assisting, trying to assist the transition. So in appreciation, I think we must somewhat applaud that a kind of do another rank. And colleagues, I don't know whether there are any apologies that you are aware of. Mr. Dumezweni, you are more than welcome to be part of this committee. Have you received any apologies?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. We have received one apology from Honorable Mlenzana. He's attending the meeting with appropriations.
Have you received any apologies?
Am I audible, Chair? Am I audible, Chair?
I can hear you. I don't know if the Chair can hear, but I can hear you.
You're audible.
Oh, I think maybe the Chair is due to network issues. Is Chair there?
Chair is not there, right?
But as I've said before, good morning, Honorable members and everyone present. The only apology that we have received today was from Honorable Mlenzana, as I've indicated before. He's attending a meeting with appropriations. Thank you.
Chairperson, are you still in the meeting? It seems as if you are muted.
I'm muted. Sorry.
Yes, now you are back now. Thanks, Chair.
I've been joking to myself. Thank you very much. Yeah, the AG has been very busy this week, briefing a number of important stakeholders in as far as the work of the Office of the Auditor General is concerned. She has tabled the report, the outcomes on PFMA, and I understand that they are still so busy for the local government audits. We hope that they will be doing well even in that space. In hearing what the outcomes were, there's a mixed bag of acknowledging the outcome. From our side, we appreciate that they continue to table in good time, which is something that we need to encourage at all times and all costs. So, AG, I'm going to give over to you to take the meeting into your own strategy, and thereafter we deal with the areas of interest. Mr. Mkaji?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Are you wanting to hear from Mr. Mkaji first, or may I proceed?
You can proceed, JG.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Good morning to you. I'd like to greet the members of Team AGSA and other officials that are on the platform this morning. You're quite right, Chair. It's been an incredibly busy week, and I guess it is a good point for us to start off this conversation on our plans for the year beginning the 1st of April 2023, going into 2024 and beyond. This strategy that we shared with you before, and as you rightly say, we would have shared it with you when you came for the workshop and even before that as a presentation when we did the conversation on the Blue Book last year. The strategy really is about getting the institution to start doing its work still independently, still in accordance with its mandate, but ever better. We have inherited a very strong institution with a lot going for it. The question that confronted us as the current members of Team AGSA, this generation of Team AGSA, the challenge that confronted us is how do we take the institution forward? How do we increase the impact it's able to have on society? On the next slide, I think it's always good for us to start with the reputation promise, which I always pause to remind everybody, including ourselves as Team AGSA, that reputation promise, the vision, the mission, and the constitutional mandate, those have not changed. What has changed is us taking stock of the current context within which we operate, the current tools and capabilities we have, and really starting to question how do we optimize our contribution into society. What we've done then is craft this new strategy, Culture Shift 2030, which the honourable members are very au fait with. This week, as you say, honourable chair, we would have shared the PFMA outcomes, which yes, show some progress, especially in terms of at least getting the number of clean audits up, getting the credibility of financials up. But if you scratch the surface a little bit more, you realise that we are not yet closing the gap on delivery, and we are also far too slow on driving governance improvements in the bigger departments and in the bigger state-owned entities, which together have a much more significant impact on the economy, on the lives of citizens, on our economic growth, and also on our development trajectory as a country. And what we've seen is, and I think if you look on the strategic context we've put on the next slide, which is really to say, even if you look at the progress we're making at PFMA, combined with what we're seeing at MFMA, which is even slower, there is a continued experience of very slow movements towards performance, towards integrity, towards transparency and accountability within state-owned, within state institutions, including departments. And so the question then becomes, what do we do about that? So that's part of the context. And I think on the next slide, we highlight what the impact of this continuing gap is. In that whilst we try and get outcomes to improve, as slow as what they are, the gap between what institutions should be delivering to the citizenry and what they actually are is increasing. And the impact is quite significant on the lives of people, but also on the stability of our democracy. And what happens is that then the trust that citizens have in institutions broadly diminishes, even in the office of the AG. So whilst it may feel like we could keep saying, well, as the office of the AG, we are distinct from others and that we do our work, we're generally well regarded, that would be for little purpose if we didn't stop to consider that we're also part of the organs of state. When mistrust starts to creep in, it also affects us. The mud gets thrown at all of us who have particular functions and responsibilities given in our constitutional democracy. Let's go to the next slide so that we can get to the nub of it. So the point I was making is in saying that we've got a full arsenal of legislative mandate, constitutional mandate, capabilities within the office, and of course support from Parliament and from government. The question then is, what do we do with all of that, even with these powers that we have to enforce accountability mechanisms in government, these new teeth? What do we do with it in a way that's going to contribute meaningfully to closing the gap in trust between institutions and citizens? What we stumbled upon, having been working on this thing for a long time and considering it very deeply, is this idea that beyond worrying just about clean audits, let's start considering to what extent institutions are doing good, to what extent they are delivering on their mandate, not in a tick box sort of way, but in qualitative aspects. And how do we shift them from doing harm to doing the basics, as let's say somebody who might have an unqualified audit with findings or even a clean audit, where if they're doing the basics, they're not harming anybody. But how do we shift them towards the right-hand side of that continuum on the screen, which is where they are doing good, they are delivering on their mandate and doing so consistently in a way that's effective, that's efficient, and characterized by economy. Because the reality is, if we can get the majority of auditees or public institutions operating closer to the right, and then we'll be able to start closing the gap in the experience of citizens and be able to start making sure that we can use the resources we have ultimately to the benefits of citizens. In doing harm, you might find some of those institutions that have got typical disclaimer of audit opinions and the like. The question is, how do you get them to move across the continuum? In doing basics, you may have some who are getting clean audits. The question is, well, how do we audit slightly differently? How do we influence them slightly differently? How do we even use our powers of enforcement to shift them towards the right? So the strategic aspiration is for us to have a much stronger, more direct and consistent impact on improving the lived reality of ordinary South Africans. We know that we can't do it by ourselves. We're going to have to rely on the effective contribution by a broader network of stakeholders, some within government and others outside of the state, such as those that belong in the civil society or even in business. But you've got to get everybody in the country playing their part as mandated so that we can systematically shift the state of public institutions towards the right. We believe that we can, still using our audit, independent audit insights, still using our reach across the spheres, across government, across multiple periods, to influence the right choices and the right decisions by those that run government. We can also use our tools of enforcement, our new powers, to start making sure that we move everybody towards the right. So it's really saying, everything we've got, how do we use it to contribute towards shifts towards the right? I think we can move on to the next slide. So we set the six strategic objectives, which you know. I'll start on the right-hand side, which is the influence. How do we, the insight. How do we order slightly differently, provide more timely, credible insights? Chair, you talked about us providing timely reports, and that's something that we continue to do. The question is, how do we up the level of insight? You would have noticed that the last MFMA report started to reflect a lot more on service delivery issues. To start closing the gap in understanding between audit matters and delivery issues. The PFMA report that we tabled this week similarly is starting to close that gap. And what we're seeing is that amongst our teams even, the ability to see that natural connection is getting better. But excitingly, amongst our stakeholders, they're starting to see that gap and they're starting to understand their role in closing the gap. Another objective is to influence different players to make different decisions using those independent insights. In previous strategies, we would have called this vision. When we had the four Vs, you might recall, we had the one about going out to stakeholders and driving visibility. This time around, we've crafted it as influence because we're trying to up the game in terms of the impact of how we are being visible, always being mindful of limited resources, limited time, but targeting particular platforms and engagements and conversations that will influence the right choices by the people who are appointed and elected to run institutions. Wanting to use our enforcement powers, which we tabled together with our general report this week, a detailed MI report, which deals with accountability, transparent accountability on how we dealt with the powers that were given to us. For the honorable members of SCOEC, that report that was tabled this week builds on what we would have shared with you last year. And it remains our aspiration that our honorable chair will create a platform with you. You'll give us an opportunity to come and dialogue with you now that we've shared the report that is as detailed as what it is. And then on the left-hand side of the slide, I'll start at the bottom. When we say shift public sector culture, It's really about using all the things on the right-hand side of the screen, as well as looking across the accountability ecosystem and figuring out how we can get different players to play their role more effectively so that we start to shift the culture. And to advocate for them to do the right things consistent with their respective mandate and then equip them to do that. And then the top two on the left-hand side deal with our internal operations. How do we make sure that we are sustainable and efficient in that we have the right quality, quantity of resources available to us to do our work, that we're managing those resources and deploying them as efficiently as what is possible so that over time, every bit of resource spend, whether it is time, whether it's financial resources, all of it is really about getting us to be more efficient and achieving more with less. Let's go to the next slide. The journey of implementing our strategy is one that we have staggered because I guess we have to be pragmatic and programmatic in how we approach this. So in 2022, which is the year we've just finished earlier this year and shared with you the outcomes of it in the conversation on the annual report, that was really a year of transition, wrapping up the 4B strategy and starting to prepare for this culture shift 2030. 2022-23 is also somewhat of a transition, but starting to really implement and experiment a bit with some of the aspects of the Culture Shift 2030 strategy. We've also focused on continuing to roll out the MIs, which as I indicated, is well set out in the most recent report in terms of the journey we followed. 2023-24 going forward, that's the period when we start to kick things up a notch. So you've seen us starting a bit, but now going forward, we expect to kick things into full gear. What we are seeing already is that the new strategy has energized the members of Team AGSA. Our colleagues have been most inspired by the strategy. They've been able to take on the challenges of it. Some of them, when we first spoke to them about the strategy, struggled to wrap their minds around what we were saying. But even they are the ones now who are enthusiastic in terms of implementing it and experimenting with it. And they have been energized by seeing the different results in the portfolios that they lead. Our conversations with all of the business units across the country have convinced the leadership team and I that within Team AGSA, we have staff who are patriotic professionals who have taken on the challenges of this new strategy with vigor and with tremendous energy. We've also noticed that sharing the outcomes of MFMA a few months ago and now with PFMA over the last couple of weeks, the different players in the accountability ecosystem have similarly been quite impressed with the journey that we've taken. In all of the engagements we've had, every single one, we've had at the first instance appreciation expressed for the work we're doing and the direction we're taking, whether it is accounting officers or the executive, and particularly the oversight. The legislators across the country have been most encouraged by the work we've been doing, and I believe it'll empower them to start locating themselves in terms of how they're going to do their work even better. Developing the public sector culture baseline is something that we're busy working on, and it's something that I think has energized Team AGSA specifically, but also other parts of the accountability ecosystem. When we share with them the journey we're undertaking, we do find that there is resonance in terms of what the moment requires of all of us, but also in terms of the approaches that we're taking. In terms of the methodologies, and later on in the presentation, Honorable Chair, we will take you through the audit directive that we've amended, which sets out some of the methodology changes that we've put into the system as part of responding to the pressures of and the challenges and aspirations of this new strategy, but also some of the feedback we've been getting over years, where matters around how we approach the audits of disclaimer audits, auditees, in a way that is more efficient. That's something that has come up over a number of years, and we promised we would do that. So we've actually made those changes. Matters around how we audit some of the smaller auditees more efficiently, still get into a quality audit, but do so more efficiently. We have taken that feedback on board and we've actually made the changes that are necessary. So what you'll see in the audit directive we'll talk about later is about those sorts of changes. We've also started to experiment a little bit more with our general reports. You would have seen that the one we've launched just this week is different from what you would have seen, let's say, 2 years ago, and certainly even 2 years ago when we started on this journey, when I started as the Auditor General. In terms of the implementation of the new path, we've seen that our teams are getting more energized, more excited about this new instrument, and they're starting to see the possibilities that sit in terms of driving a good impact from the work we do. Having located these new powers of enforcement in the culture shift strategy, I believe has certainly helped. Our teams are not so afraid of this instrument as what they may have been a couple of years ago, but importantly, they're starting to see how everything hangs together. It's not that you audit and finish and then look for an MI, but rather in the course of even planning your audit, you're starting to consider how you can use your powers to drive swifter corrective action by the people that run institutions. And so the impact that we report on in the report on the MIs would demonstrate to you that the approach that the members of Team EHSA have adopted is that of constructively engaging accounting officers and inspiring them to take the right sort of action. And that's having the type of impact, which is quite pleasing to see. In terms of the work that we're doing around the technological capabilities of the office, the DAG will brief you a little bit more on that later on, but I can give you some view that over the past year, we've already started to see more activity in the right direction, which should get us towards the ultimate in terms of that audit software we keep talking about, but also more generally in terms of transforming the level of digital activity and reliance within the office. Let's go to the next slide. Thanks, Adana. So in terms of how we've listened to what our stakeholders across the country are looking for, they keep saying, look, let's scale up the implementation of the MI so we can up consequence management. Absolutely. And we will continue to increase the level of implementation. This past year, we've been sitting at 42% on combination between PFMA and MFMA. Next year, we'll ramp that up to 80%. And in the year that follows, we'll be at 100%. So the implementation of the MI instrument is running well on course. In fact, if nothing else, we've actually fast-tracked the plans that we originally had in response to the requests and nudges from oversight. Okay. In terms of collaborating with public bodies, when we did the COVID-19 audits, the honorable members of SCOAC will remember how we worked well with a number of different bodies, especially those that were part of the Fusion Center. The new powers, the MI powers, require of us to collaborate that much more effectively. And if we look at the state of governance generally, whether it's here or across the world, there's a greater appreciation that we can all do better if we collaborate much more efficiently. In fact, at the global level amongst the SAI community, the level of appreciation of how SAI can contribute to the drive around anti-corruption, that has increased significantly, where even there are even clearer directives and instruments being shared across sides on how we can deepen the work we're doing around, in collaborating with law enforcement agencies and other investigative bodies as part of the anti-corruption move. We're seeing that's no different here, and we'll continue to deepen the relationships we have and the working arrangements we have with all of the players in the accountability ecosystem. Speaking of the ecosystem, that's a diagram that the Honourable Members of Parliament know only too well, because the BRRR, every single one would have had presentations on Team EHSA starting with this particular slide. And more than anything, it's saying that actually all of us want the same thing, and certainly the vast majority. And what we've got to do is find ways to keep locating everybody and their roles in the ecosystem of accountability, because if we get improvements in the effectiveness with which every single one of these role players plays their part, we really can have a step change in the state of governance in the country and the state of service delivery, which will ultimately benefit citizens. I think we can move on to the next slide. One of the most topical matters, and I'm sure the honourable members of SCOA will be wondering about, is how are we processing the reports that emerged from the Judicial Commission of Inquiry into State Capture that was led by the now Chief Justice Zondo. We've taken on board some of the observations. There was an observation that talked about the role of auditors. Fortunately, it was mostly around other auditors. You would have known that many of the auditees where we participated, whether it was Danel, it was our participation that shifted the matters around audit there. SAA, similar, and Transnet, as you're learning now, in terms of us having now taken over the audit. But what it does do, though, this report, is it highlights that we've got to also, as AGSA, improve our audit risk assessment, consider our scoping and processes, because it's an opportunity for us to learn and keep getting better at our instruments. It's no good for us to brag about having a good audit methodology and not respond when there are specific instances within our democracy that actually invite us to learn. And what we're learning is that there are things within how we use data analytics, for example, that could improve, where we could even use the fact that we see every single auditee across government to identify indicators of fraud and corruption that run across multiple government departments and institutions. And that will help us make an even better contribution in the fight against fraud and corruption. Much of it is going to rely on, yes, our improving, but also on us collaborating even more efficiently with other state organs, that so that over time, we all as a country benefit from this investment that we made in this commission of inquiry. Let's go to the next one. I'm now going to hand over to the Deputy AG. As you know, he's the accounting officer. Between him and I, we believe it's best that he be the one to take the honourable members of SCOEC through the matters on the internal environment. I now hand over to him.
Thank you, AG. And good morning, honourable members. It's a pleasure to take the committee through the rest of the section, especially the internal focus, something that AG had made clear that we need to get our head together as the executive to ensure that we get this right. So while the focus of our strategy is really about us changing the culture out there, there are things that we need to do internally to ensure that we are more than ready to be able to execute the new strategy. So, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, our focus area from an internal perspective are broken into six areas, and I'll quickly remind the committee as to what are those particular areas. The first one is around the organisational engagement as far as the culture shift is concerned. AG Zakani Maluleke went across the country to each and every business unit to go and sell the new strategy so that our people understand the why. It is obviously a very ambitious strategy. It was important that our people understand that the reason that we're focusing on a culture shift, which at first people thought is beyond achievement, is something that we cannot achieve. It was important that she sell it. And I think my assessment is that our people have really bought into that. I also followed suit and I went across each and every business unit across the country to go and sell the how as to how are we going to achieve that. And in doing that, we realized that there are some few things that we need to do internally. It was important for us to have our own leadership alignment, which is the second bullet point, and our own internal culture shift. There are some few things that we need to focus on internally, and we are working on that. Some of the critical aspects around the internal leadership and culture shift is just to change our behaviors, make sure that we stick to our values, and we need to ensure that our daily duties and the way that we do our work is talking to the new ways of the practices that you want to adopt and create a conducive environment. It is a lot to ask of our people, but I do believe that it is doable. We had to focus on relooking into our resources to ensure that we are resourced for success. The committee will remember that the current funding model, which I'll talk about later, is focused on how we use our people to execute the audit. Our people will remain the most important asset in us executing our audit mandate. However, going forward, we need to complement our human capacity with appropriate capabilities, such as the right digital assets that we're going to use to execute our audits going forward. And we are looking into how do we resource that. We have invested in the past few years in the CA profession, which has gone a long way to professionalize our audit professionals, that many of them have got the CA qualification, but we need to complement them with the necessary complementary skills such as data analytics and cyber security aspect to ensure that the service offering that we provide is appropriate. Ken, and I'll take it that these slides have been seen, and I will just spend more time on this one, and then the rest I'll be fairly quick as I move along through that. We have also committed to strengthen our ethical posture. It's important, Chair, and I think the experience in the past few months have shown us that as an office, we cannot find ourselves where our ethical posture is doubted, and we will continue to ensure that it is fairly strengthened. Our financial sustainability is important for us to ensure that we remain independent. The committee will remember that we got an award where we are one of two most independent sites in the world, according to the World Bank. We'd like to maintain that because that is important. For our work to have the credibility that it currently has, the office cannot be doubted as far as our independence is concerned. And if we compromise our financial independence and our financial sustainability, where we have to rely on hands out, it will compromise that. So in whatever we do, we are very conscious about us maintaining our financial sustainability. And lastly, Chair, something that is very close to my heart is for us to improve our technological capabilities. Finally, Chair, our digital transformation is gaining traction. You will recall that the committee has raised concern about the instability in the ICT space from a leadership perspective. I'm glad that we have finally stabilized that area, and the new leadership is assisting us to make traction as far as the digital transformation is concerned. There are areas which I'm going to share with the committee in terms of the focus area further on. But critically is to ensure that we have the capability internally for us to deliver on our mandate in the most efficient and sustainable manner possible. Let's move to the next slide, please. So we'll unpack some of the areas that we're going to talk about. To move to the sustainability one, please. And I'll be very high level because we have seen this last year. This is the second year that we're discussing the strategy with you. AG mentioned that we used the first year to settle the ground. It was important for us not to rush into very ambitious targets in the first year of the new strategy to allow the system to accept that there are changes in here. So as far as the financial sustainability is concerned, maintaining our independence still remains paramount. We are committed to work within the parameters that we have set, which is the 1% to 4%. You will recall that 2 years ago, we had a shortfall. We're able to turn around the situation, which for the past financial year, we're able to have a small surplus of 40 million, which, Chair, later on, we're going to ask you to give us permission to retain that so that it allows us to invest in our digital transformation. Going forward, we are comfortable that we should be able to meet the budget that we have committed to and stick to the 1 to 4% of the net surplus. A critical part for us to maintain our financial independence is us being able to have enough cash. While we are doing fairly well in the cash collection, Chair, there's still room to improve. Our debtors are still increasing. We do have decent cash for now. And our target is to have enough cash to help us cover our operations for at least a 2 months period. You know that we don't rely on any debtors, on any facilities. We use our own cash at hand. So it will be important that we keep watching this. It's an area where we keep focusing on in terms of how can we improve the collection of the cash that is tied up in debtors. You will have seen that when we finished the year, our debtors was over R1 billion. There was a major drive to try and collect as much as we can. And there was a time when we were able to do that. However, given that at this stage we're at the MFMA cycle, where we found that it's a difficult area to collect, our debtors book is increasing. And we are going to need all the support we can get from the committee to help us unlock those debtors, especially to allow us to invest in the areas that we need to invest into. Next slide, please. Please let's move to the next slide. Oh, sorry. This is the right one. So thank you, Chen. On the same one. Sorry, I didn't realize that. So on our sustainability, as far as people matters are concerned, we are focusing on our targets. So we have set our targets that we should not lose more than 6% of our high-performing individuals. Should that happen, we need to understand that what's going on. We are doing the necessary checks to assess that our people are fine. We do appreciate that mental health is the key concern at the moment, and we've got various initiatives and surveys that keep us close to our people and keep on the path of them. Critically, Chair, we have set ourselves an ambitious target as far as the APC pass rate. APC is the final exam of the CA qualification. We have set our target for the next financial year to achieve 50% and the other year 55% and the after 60%. What this means is at least one out of two people who sit for a board exam should pass the board exam. Given the profile of the people that we employ as an office, it will go a long way to change the profile of the profession. You will remember, Chair, that this year we produced over 300 people. We believe we need to continue on that particular target in terms of getting our people to realize their dreams of being CAs. You know our model, we cannot keep everyone, which means if we succeed in this particular pipeline of producing CAs, we're going to be able to increase the talent pool for the country. This will go a long way to achieve the culture shift strategy, because now all the municipalities out there that could not have access to qualified finance personnel will have access to the people who have been trained by the Office of the Auditor General. So we are committed to this particular target, Chair, and we are looking forward to ensure that we achieve it. The success we achieved this year was not a fluke. It was the culmination of a lot of years of investment in terms of how we support our people, how we train them, and all the necessary, and creating the conducive environment for them to be able to thrive. Lastly, Chen, on this particular one, we are going to ensure that the culture within AGSA is the appropriate culture, and we're going to continue assessing that. Let's move to the next slide, please. On quality of audit, Chen, in the past we used to say, quality is the license for us to trade. We have now understood that as an audit profession, quality is the reason we exist. It is more important for us as a supreme audit institution that there could never be doubt about the quality of our audit opinion. And we're going to continue to monitor this. We were able to meet our quality targets last year between 80 and 90. And we are going to ensure that we continuously continue to improve on that. Chair, I'm happy to confirm that our ISQM implementation, which is due on the, which is effective from 15 December, is on track. The ISQM is a new audit standard that will change how the audit quality process is managed. I hope it's not just for the AGSA, it will go a long way to make the audit profession regain the credibility deficit that has emerged in the past few years, given some of the audit failures that has happened out there. For us as a Supreme Audit Institution, it's very critical that our quality can never be questioned. Next slide, please. Chair, as far as the ethics and internal control, it's important for us to lead by example. So we are going to continue to ensure that our ethics rate is done. We are able to demonstrate to our auditees and the rest of South Africa that we do lead by example. We have committed to ourselves that a clean audit is non-negotiable. There will never be a situation where we, as the Supreme Audit Institution, go out there and tell our auditees that they need to have a clean audit and we don't have that. So we do endeavor, and that will remain our non-negotiable. is something that the CFOs know that we need to ensure that any audit finding will resolve them with speed. You have known that in the past there were certain areas, and as a learning organization, there will be findings. But just like we tell our auditees, the issue is to take them, understand what the issue is, and go back to the drawing board and fix those findings. So even in our case, we do have some aging IT systems that we need to change, which we need to work with those systems. It's a question of what compensating controls can we put in place to work within the current inefficiencies and some of the deficits that we may have by the legacy system. So I do believe it's an area that can never be compromised as an audit office, and we'll continue to commit to a clean audit. Thank you. Let's move to the next slide. So, Chair, on efficiently, this is a very, it's a target that has been very difficult for us to gain traction on, because it's forcing us to think differently. We've been used to doing work in a different manner. We've been used to having a lot of people going to do the audits because that's how our model has been based. So we are taking a step back and we are reviewing our operating model. We are relooking into a number of factors and we want to see as to which levers do we pull. You know, in the past, we have relied heavily on CWC firms just because we cannot resource internally to a level where we can perform when we got our peak audits. We are looking at what is the ideal sweet spot for us to resource internally and how do we leverage the internal resources by pulling them effectively before we go out to the market. We are still going to continue using the CWC because it's impossible for us as an audit institution to have enough resources to deal with the peaks. So, but it's a question of how do we get the balance right. We are looking into using the combination of our human capital, but supported by appropriate digital tools and also appropriate audit methodology. AG later on will take you through some of our recommendation in terms of some of the changes on how we're going to execute our audit. That is an area, Chair, that I believe that there's still a lot of scope for us to unpack, and we're going to be looking into that. So we have committed that for the next financial year, we're going to achieve at least a 2% improvement on the baseline. It seems like less, but it's still the initial stage. Going on, Chair, we're looking to improve by over 10 to 15% in terms of how we conduct our audit. We do appreciate that for us to remain relevant as an audit office, we cannot keep increasing the cost of doing the audit to the fiscal. We need to do more with less. And it's important for us that we find more creative ways in which we never compromise the quality of the audit and we do enough work to ensure that we can give the necessary insight to our stakeholders. We have committed that we're going to implement a number of plans that will get us into this area. It's fine, we can move on. So one of the areas that will help us on this is our digital transformation. I touched slightly on it before, but it's going to be important. Firstly, we use a system that has been there for a while, Teammate. At the time that it was implemented, it was the Rolls-Royce of audit software. But over the years, it has since not been as relevant as we can. And to that end, Chair, I'm happy to confirm that we are going on a procurement journey to get a fit-for-purpose audit software that ideally should help our people do their work much more efficiently. While we're going for the main audit software, we are plugging the gaps with some of the tools that we can use in the meantime to ensure that we do our work much more efficiently. We also appreciate that for us to have meaningful information internally, we need a fit-for-purpose enterprise resource planning. And the office is embarking on a journey to understand what the market looks like. And we are hoping that in the next 2 to 3 years, we should be able to put a plan in place to allow to do that. All in all, Chair, the digital transformation will be a game changer for the office. And we will talk to you later in terms of how do we need to tweak the funding model as it currently stands to allow us to invest in this digital capability, but also ensure that the investment translates into us doing the audit much better and add more value to the Republic and also to the auditees and our stakeholders. But we need to then find a way as to how does that translate into a funding model that encourages that kind of an investment. At the moment, as you will know, our recovery basis is based on the number of hours that our people spend at an audit environment. Let's move on. So, shifting public sector culture, Tim, this is the ultimate goal of what you want to do. You said in your opening remarks that AG was very visible this week. We have heard some very good feedback about the PFMA, the various initiatives that have been done in terms of the roadshows. We find that people are accepting our focus of us changing the focus in, to change the culture. Before we can change the culture outside, it's important that we change it internally. So we are going to focus on changing our own internal culture. But in terms of the outside focus, we need to find a way, as AG mentioned earlier, to move our ODTs from the lower level to the top side in terms of where we all inspire to be. And it seems to be a very courageous goal, but we do believe that it is doable. So for the current financial year, we're going to have the baseline. And based on that baseline, we're going to start to shift the culture by putting the ODTs on a scale to see as to where do they feature. Chair, I would like us to reflect on this picture from next year and look into the time that AG back and its time come to an end and say, how did you manage this? It's going to be a very difficult journey, but I do believe it is possible. We do have plans in place as to how do we use the rest of the accountabilities, ecosystem stakeholders to work with us in this journey. It's not something we're going to achieve on our own. We're going to highlight it, and we're going to try to give the necessary insight and try to influence to ensure that this is done. So while this is the ultimate goal of this strategy, Chair, everything else that we've got around it support us to go and achieve this. Let's just move on. Insight. So I touched a little bit on the insight on the previous slide to say we do a lot of audit. It's important for us that the audit outcome is not the only thing that we share, but we share the most appropriate insight to ensure that proper action is taken. Chair, in one, Honorable Chair, in one of our engagement with you, you correctly pointed out that as an office, we touch various ODTs in the public sector. It's up to us to assist our stakeholders by connecting the dots. We get various information, and while we share the audit outcome at an ODT level, it's also important for us that we share the relevant insight with the relevant stakeholders so that they can make the meaningful contribution and make the right decision in terms of how they move things forward. We're going to create a centralized database data analytics capability, which will allow us to easily connect those dots. We're going to categorize our ODTs in terms of the various classification. You'll have seen that we're starting to produce specific reports, such as the Water Board report that came out, and we're going to start giving specific sector insights. So a particular sector does not have to go through a SIC report, but they can get a report that is specific to their sector. And if they spend time on this particular report, it should give them the necessary insight. And we're going to partner with a number of civil society organizations and give them the right information that will enable them to do their work on the other side of encouraging our ODTs to do the right thing. Let's move on to influence. Okay, on the influence part, we realize that we can only issue our reports. We need to make sure that we influence everyone else. So we've got a target of 90 to 100 of the plan for the year. So what we need to do is to say, who do you want to influence? So we're going to have a specific plan for each stakeholder that we engage with and say, this is the message you want them to understand. And how do you give them the insight that will get them to be able to do the right thing? So while the first plan is to get the accountability framework implemented, going forward is the question of now executing against that particular plan. We believe that this will be a game changer, Chair, because us coming on every year saying the same thing, but without it getting the necessary influence, does not help us. So we need to see that after AG has come out to announce or the PFMA outcome, what are the actions that gets taken within the accountability value system? Everyone needs to understand and say, so what role do I need to play? So people don't just listen to the message and get into a shock situation. but it gets them to physical action that can result in physical result being seen in terms of how they then conduct themselves. Lastly, Chair, you kept telling us that you have now given us tips, and we will use those tips in our enforcement part. Let's move to the enforcement one, please. So while we do all these nice things, Chair, we will not shy away from using the newly found tip that you've given us. We do know and appreciate that there's sometimes a bit of impatience in terms of when are we going to use those tips? When are we going to see people in orange overalls? Chair, we will share with the committee later today in terms of some of the successes that you are seeing already. While you may not have issued a certificate of death, there's been action and slight improvement on things where people appreciate that when you issue an audit report now, they don't have to wait for us to come back next year. An MI will follow you. And in these MIs, we have seen a process where money has been returned to the fiscal. When we last saw you, we shared with you some of the success stories. I know that we have said we need to continuously share some of the details in terms of what we are seeing on the ground, thanks to the powers that Parliament has given to the AG. We are going to use these powers in a responsible manner, but if need be, we're going to use that. We're going to use those new tips that you've given us to bite. We do believe that we need to take our stakeholders along this journey, and the office is spending a lot of time to ensure that there is full understanding in terms of what needs to be done. So, Chair, what have you done so far? We have accelerated the rollout of the MI process. We have covered more auditees than we initially thought in our plan. We have seen a significant amount being taken to reduce the time it takes to resolve MI compared to when we started. There's still room to improve on how quickly we can resolve it, but I think it was the right strategy to get everyone to understand the process so we don't rush it. We spend a lot of time understanding each MI and engaging with the stakeholders to ensure that there is buy-in and our stakeholders are getting a better appreciation as far as the MI process is concerned. AG has spent a lot of time trying to educate our stakeholders, especially the accountability stakeholders, to ensure as to what is their role in ensuring this. She's normally at pain to say that if it gets to a stage where we have to issue a certificate of death, we all need to appreciate that the ecosystem has failed. Because before we get, we're supposed to have pulled certain levers that ensures that we don't get to that stage. So I do hope, Chair, that we will continue with the message. And if it needs be, we are going to enforce. Just move on. Chair, the budget, 2023-2024, I'll take it as read and I'll be fairly quick. Some of the stuff I've already highlighted. We are still going to be, based on the current funding model, Chair, we are still self-funding. We are going to be sustainable. And the markup factor as a grade is still in place. And there's no keeping of tariffs and the tariff increase. I've spoken about our cash cover, which we are hoping to keep it at least 2 months cash in the bank to allow us to service our operational requirement for from 2 months to 2.5 months. We do hope to make it a bit longer. COVID has shown us that sometimes the country can go on lockdown and for a quarter, you're not doing any work. So it's important that we continue on that. I've said, Chair, that with us going through all these internal changes, it's going to be important for us to come to you and talk about an appropriate funding model. The previous one was put in place in 2008. It will be important that we review it. It's not that we're going to change everything, but we're going to have to bring a blend of using the hours that our people spend, which is critical, because you will never, ever replace the people power with any robotics. But it will be important that we also blend it up. So quickly on the funding model, Chair, we're not making the official request right now. We're just socializing the idea with you, and we'll come back to you. Let's stay on the funding model. So with the cash shift strategy, we realize that we must use much more digital transformation, which means we must invest in technology to allow us to do some of the work. So some of these things entail that we're going to need to have what we can to automate and use robotics to do routine work that can be done by a robot. But we'll never take away the intelligence of a human auditor to interpret the result. So how do we build that? So we are looking into a model that we think will make sense, and we'll bring that to SCOWEC for us to agree on a journey that will then encourage us to invest in this digital capability. We have committed to invest more in technology, and I've mentioned that we're going to have a final ask for you to allow us to retain the little surplus that we had from last year. And I hope that that will go a long way to help us to fund. Chair, if we were to collect half the outstanding debt that is out there, it will go a long way to allow us to make this investment that we intend to make in this technology space to allow us to do our work much better. So we're going to be asking you to assist us to help us collect as much as we can. As I said, this is not the formal submission. We are going to submit to the committee in due course. Okay, let's move on. Chair, the summary of our income statement, we have presented to you our past one, that we made a bit of a surplus of 40 million, which we're going to ask you to allow us to repay it. We have consulted with National Treasury. Our budget for the next financial year was 28. I'm glad that we are on track to meet budget, and I believe that we should be able to continue on that basis. And we had a budget of 65 for the other financial year, 65 million net surplus. Our revenue is consistent, having re-established a baseline. You will recall that there was a bit of a jump from previous year, which was affected by COVID. But now the baseline, given that we've got some new OTTs like Transnet, and have taken some of the work that was previously done by other CWC firm, our audit income has stabilized around your 4.4 billion. We are looking into ways to improve our own hours. You will know when we use CWC firms, we do not put a markup, but with our creative way of resourcing internally, we're looking into how we can do the work ourselves to the best of our ability. Hence, you'll see that the CWC work has stabilized from 1.1 down to 800 million over the next 2 years. The reason for that is during the COVID period, we had to rely a lot on CWC firms to help us to catch up with the backlog that we had. We are looking to improve our gross profit by how we better leverage technology, Chair, and we're focusing on maintaining our overhead to an acceptable level. Please, let's move on. Capital expenditure. You see that for the current year and the next 2 years, there will be quite a bit of focus on computer software, which is in line with our ambition of our digital transformation. And that is where we believe there's hype will be. It might slightly be higher. We're still going out to the market to go and understand it. But our best estimate at this stage before we can commit to what the market is telling us is that there will be a bit of an improvement in our computer software in line with our strategic objective. To this end, we are going to be asking you to allow us to retain our surpluses in the next few years to help us reinvest back into this journey so that we do continue to be financial independent. Please, let's move on. Thank you, Chen. I would like to hand over back to the AG. Before that, what is the ask as far as the new strategy is concerned and also the budget side of things? We know that there are certain distressed municipalities that cannot pay us. Our ask is for National Treasury to pay the portion that they're supposed to pay on behalf of those particular distressed municipalities. We do appeal to you as the committee to talk to your colleagues to prioritize paying the AG. We allow our auditors to pay us within 30 days. What is said sometimes is that we go and do an audit. Our auditors do have money to hire consultants to prepare financials, but they don't have the money to pay us. We do believe that the work that we do does add value to the process, and it will be important that people appreciate that it's important to continue to fulfill their obligation as far as the audit mandate is concerned. We do have further details that we don't want to bore you with the details in terms of the breakdown of our debtors book. We have over R1 billion in debtors. You know from our previous discussion that the main area of concern is the local government, and key contributor is those that are in financial distress. We also have a stage on companies, some of them that are currently going through liquidation, such as Genel, South African SA Express, which have been liquidated. Some are not able to pay us, and it's creating a bit of a backlog in terms of the cash resources that we can have access to be able to do our work. So, Chen, I'd like to thank you for the time, and I'd like to hand back to the AG. AG, back to you, please.
AG?
Yes, Chair?
Yes, back to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, AG. Chair, I won't spend too much time on the directive, except to say just a couple of points. Every year, the Auditor General must look at the standards, the frequency, and the nature and the scope of the audits that we undertake. And we've got to do so in consultation or after consultation with SCOAC. And that's a provision of Section 13 of the Public Audit Act. We've submitted to you a revised audit directive, and just to give you a sense of what the substance of the changes are. We've had to respond to the strategic objective of efficiency, and we've also had to respond to the feedback we've been getting around the effectiveness, the cost effectiveness of our audits vis-a-vis the value. And so what we've done is we promised you about a year ago that we would look at a differentiated set of audit approaches. This audit directive puts that into motion. We piloted a number of the changes at a small set of auditees in PFMA and now in MFMA. And from those lessons, we are quite clear that we are now in a position to implement from the 2023 year the amendments to our audit methodology, which are now set out in the directive. What we will be doing is providing to a limited small number of auditees rather a review of financial statements where we believe that review is appropriate. So it's not a full extent of an audit, but it's still giving the appropriate level of assurance. We're also looking at amending our approaches to the performance information audit, especially for the smaller auditees, the ones with very little impact in terms of service delivery, and rather focus our energies and our resources towards the bigger ones that have a much more direct impact. So it's really just about amending the approaches to performance information audit. We haven't changed the compliance audit significantly. That will still apply to everybody. But what we anticipate that these changes will do is that they will provide us with some flexibility to afford some differentiation in the approaches without compromising the assurance that's required, and also without compromising our ability to give relevant insights. We have also been very careful to maintain our international benchmarking on the audit standards so that we do not fall foul of that. So we're submitting this audit directive for your consideration and comments before we can finalize it. So maybe let's just go to the very last slide that deals with the conclusion of what we're looking for from SCOAC today. Zana, if you can just go to the, here we are. So just to summarize and remind us that the essence of the conversation and the input that the DAG and I have shared so far is to solicit comments from the honorable members of SCOAC on the strat plan and the budget, to give you an opportunity to comment on the AG's annual directive. Your guidance in this matter is always quite important for us because you sit at the center of enjoying or not the nature of the insights we share with you. So it would be wonderful to hear your perspective on it. And then also we would like to nudge you to say, please prioritize a conversation with us on the MIs. I know that is an area of great interest to this committee. We've done this report, we've tabled it, and I think it would be useful for us to have a discussion on it as we agreed at the workshop beginning of the year. And then as the DAG talked about the approval of the retention of the surplus, and also just the reconfirmation of us reappointing the external auditor as proposed to you by the audit committee chair when we met last time. But thank you very much, Chair. That's our input for today. We hand over to you.
Thank you very much, AG, and your team. Indeed, for our interest today, you have managed to take us through your own strategy and with interest, the areas of emphasis which relate to culture change. In that aspect, it takes on board the effect of your audit outcomes in as far as the public sector is concerned. And that relates to the ability of the state to maximally utilize the resources that they have for value for our own communities. Your contribution is shaped through this strategy into the areas of IT, which is going to impact on the effectiveness of your audit function, something which is going to impact on the current situation. I understand that even if you do so physically, at times you experience threats which would hamper your ability because of your physical presence in the audit space. If you maximize the basis of technological influence, it then changes the entire spectrum in as far as the processes are concerned. And then you went into the funding model, which should assist in the way of ensuring that your work is done and those who are the auditees must pay for what you have done, and even looking into your ability to build appropriate infrastructure behind your own functionality is something which we need to appreciate. Yesterday, you shared with me an article, which was a very interesting article, on the nature of the New Zealand audit office. And through that audit office, you could see that they are way behind our own approach, which is very much interesting to see. The South African model, Auditor General's office, which is capable in terms of reporting in time and making impact in terms of public affairs, and creating a sense of respect in as far as accountability is concerned, driven by the accountability which ought to be followed through what you have framed as the ecosystem. We really appreciate to be taken through this, and I'm sure members will be able to make their input into the varying areas which would want our decision on. Honorable members, that's the AG's input. Are there any comments, questions? If you do so, in line, you can raise your hands in the, that's right. The first one from Honorable Sonyane. Is there any other hand? The second one from Honorable Matafa. There are two hands so far in the system. In absence of any further hands, I'm going to give over to Honorable Sonyane.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Nice to see you again. Chair, we welcome the presentation from the AG. Obviously, always on point. It was a beautiful presentation, and we welcome it as the committee. My comments are not much, Chairperson. My comments are actually few. I just want to speak on the issue of the surplus. I just like to congratulate the Office of the AG again on them being able to do what a lot of departments cannot do in this country, in actually having a surplus even during times when there are almost owed R1 billion by auditees. So we'd like to say congratulations on that one. Please do grow it up so that it does cover you for more than 2.5 months. You will never know what might happen in this country. It's always important to have a surplus with you. And then on the issue of the clean audits being received by the Office of the Auditor General, it is always crucial that the Office of the AG must always have the clean audits, obviously being the custodian of making sure that this country moves to the right direction financially. It is important for them to have the clean audits always, which then will bring me, Chairperson, to the issue of the auditees which are owing the Auditor General's office. Something needs to be done about these auditees. Last time I did say that if it means that the AG's office must attach those cars of those mayors, let it be so, so that they walk, actually, and then they will actually take it seriously, because it absolutely makes no sense, Chair, that you have municipalities that can pay for consultants, but they cannot pay the monies which they need to pay to the Office of the Auditor General. It's a shame, actually, and I think something seriously needs to be done. Yes, Treasury needs to be brought on board in making sure that these auditees that are owing the money that's supposed to go to the Auditor General gets paid directly to them before they take monies to those municipalities. And then on the issue of the fourth industrial revolution, Chair, we are really looking forward to the new systems of the Auditor General that they're going to implement in order for them to be able to work remotely. I mean, in the world that we live in now, especially after COVID, it is very important to be able to work remotely. And then it is also important in also saving costs to be able to work remotely. So we're really looking forward in the development of what they're saying that they're going to develop in making sure that technologies can be implemented. But overall, Chair, we're very happy with the presentation. We are happy with where they are. They must continue doing the good work. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sonyane.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chair, AG, and the AG and the team. Now, Chair, let me join. Yes, I'm on, Chair. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Chair?
I hear you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Can I proceed, Chair?
Yes, you can proceed. We hear you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, Chairperson, let me start first by...
What happened? Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'm greeting everyone on the platform, the AG and the DAG. And allow me to join Honorable Sonyane in welcoming the presentation. I agree with it's always spot on. It is easy to follow. A strategy of such a huge institution tends to get complicated, but the manner in which it's presented to the committee, it makes it easy to follow. And for that, we are truly appreciative. Chairperson?
Yes.
No, I think your mic is it's open. So I'm thinking maybe you want to draw my attention as I make submissions. But Chair, one thing that Honorable Sonyane has raised is on the issue of outstanding debts. And as one of our key competencies as a committee to assist the AG, we tabled a question to Treasury, particularly to the Minister of Finance, in terms of what is to be done when such huge amounts remain outstanding. And the response was very encouraging. Firstly, it speaks to what Honorable Tlhonyane spoke to in terms of the surplus. The Treasury confirmed that in their view, the Office of the AG has a stable financial position. And in terms of their cash and cash equivalent, they are sufficient to cover current liabilities. But to ensure that money does come in, particularly from where it is due, we acknowledge the fact that there are municipalities that are under distress. And as the DAG is requesting that there should be continued intervention by the minister or by Treasury, I can confirm that that will continue, because in the response, there are figures that are attached to the budget that has been put aside to ensure that those municipalities under financial distress are able to meet their obligation. And for the 2022-23 financial year, the Treasury has put aside 72.6 million. And for 2023-2024, 123 million rents have been put aside for that purpose. And in 2024-25, 128 million has been put aside. So there is commitment, Comrade Chair and Comrade AAG, from Treasury that indeed they will support those particular municipalities who are unable to meet their obligation when it comes to audit fees. But most importantly, as Honorable Tlhonyane is saying, maybe it's time that assets are attached. The ministry also speaks to the powers or the powers that are derived from the act of taking legal steps. So the AG can explore those avenues as well. There is nothing wrong when that happens. So maybe my question would be, in the dispute resolution mechanism that the AG has in place, is there a part that deals with the issue of audit fees? And I think maybe it's important that it becomes an issue that is constantly discussed with the auditees, because resources are very much important for any organization to function. Chair, in terms of the strategy, I'm very pleased with what has been presented. Still on the issue of money, in terms of the data analytics and technological investments, I concur with Honorable Tlhonyane. We are in the era of 4IR, and I think that the AG has their side on the correct areas of investment, and we fully support the approach to particularly invest in those particular areas. Again, we welcome the focus on ensuring that young, vibrant candidates for chartered accountancy are supported and they are brought into the mainstream auditing ecosystem. We really appreciate that. And Chair, the last one, we did engage with the AG in terms of internal operations, particularly the strengthening thereof. It comes very sharply and strongly from the presentation and in the strategy itself. And we welcome that. Clearly, it shows that there is true commitment in terms of the culture shift in audit's areas. When they say for you to change culture, you must also start from within, and the culture will then be easy to implement anywhere else. And for that, Chair, we want to welcome this particular commitment and efforts geared in ensuring that those agreements that were reached with the Office of the AG are implemented, and most importantly, are anchored in their strategy, which will be their guiding document going into the future. Chair, with those few comments, I thank you for the opportunity to participate. And once again, well done for a brilliant presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Machafa.
You are breaking. We can hardly hear you.
Yes. I think you are saying that I must speak. May I speak, Chairperson? Hello.
authority. So that was great.
Okay. I want to comment on the, based on the issue of vision, mission, and the constitution.
Yes.
I agree with the AG when you speak on the issue of cleaning the surface. Because if we don't deal with the issues as they are at the moment, it's not going to help us in years go by. The issue of MFA and PFMA cleaning their debt, making their house in order, is what's going to help the AG's office build trust with the people. The other issue that I thought was important to comment on, can you hear me, Chairperson?
Comrade Zou, yes, we can hear you. I think the chair is in a bad network location.
I hear you.
Oh, there we go.
On the theory of change, to what extent is delivery, we are able to have, you know, to what extent is the institution itself is able to do the issues of delivery, at the same time to talk about the issue of change, especially when you talk about the culture of change. What are we talking about? What are we referring to? Because I believe it is important and it's timely that the reports, we get the reports on time as we are doing at the moment, but also to close the gap between the audit methods and the delivery methods. And if we do that, we are able to be a step closer in dealing with the methods that are critical at the AG level. The other issue is the issue of enforcement. When you talk about the public sector culture, it goes without saying that we are saying that the user must pay. And to what extent are we able to build back that culture in terms of communities and our people in general, even the private sector, to understand that if they utilize the work, the services of government, they have to pay for them. That is the public trust. But the public trust is the public trust if there's an understanding within the value chain. What does this value chain speak to? But let me stop at that, Chairperson. I'll take other issues later. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kocha. Thanks for the comments and questions. Colleagues, AG, do you have any comments?
Yes, Chair. Perhaps I could just respond to a couple of questions that were raised in specific terms, but thank you for the opportunity to do so, Chair. I'm going to keep my camera off because I can see the bandwidth is a problem. I'd like to thank the honorable members for their compliments on the presentation, on the strategy, and on the focus of the office. Fortunately, a number of executive team members are on the call, so they're able to hear the compliments directly. That are targeted at Team AGSA. In terms of leading by example on our clean audits, I hear you will continue to work on that, Honorable Sonyana, and make sure that's upheld. And the debt collection, absolutely. I think both you and Honorable Matafa have raised that quite sharply. Thank you, Honorable Matafa, for taking up the conversation with National Treasury. And what we will do as AGSA is ensure that in the next engagement with SCOAG, we give you a more transparent view of the reconciliation between what Treasury commits to paying us in relation of those audit fees for the distressed municipalities and what is ultimately received and how that matches up to the debt that's actually owing. That way you can have a complete picture. I think it's wonderful that you've looked into this area. So what we will do is we'll equip you with an even full picture so that you see from our side and not just what Treasury has provided for. It is important that we continue to enjoy their support, and it is wonderful that you are watching this area. On the legal steps, I think it's something we'll certainly look at. I'm hearing the DAG express much greater appetite around the collection of debt from the municipalities. So no doubt they'll incorporate it in terms of how we engage with municipalities on collecting the funds that are due to us. because I want to agree with Honourable Goda Mbeko that we have to start with municipalities if we're going to reinstill the culture of paying for what we all get. So a municipality that gets an audit service needs to make sure it pays for it in the same way as it also needs to make sure that it collects the revenue that's due to it from those that enjoy its services. So we'll certainly look into that. And just my last point, Honourable Chair, is the point made by Honourable Goda Mbeko about closing the gap between audit outcomes and service delivery. And we're continuing on that journey. It's certainly something that's very close to our hearts and central to our effort. What, we are busy finalising the MFMA audit for the 2022 municipal audit. So early next year, we'll be able to share with you another general report that deals in detail on how we've also set about trying to close the gap between audit outcomes on the one hand and service delivery on the other. But thank you for the opportunity, Chair, to add my voice to what has been raised, but also principally to acknowledge the compliments and the matters of emphasis as raised by the honourable members. Thank you, Chair.
DAG, have you missed anything?
Chair. No, I think the AG has covered everything. We have
checked. Well, colleagues, what has been provided by the AG in terms of this briefing goes at the heart of accountability. And not only accountability, value for money as a primacy of the actual fiscus, which has been provided to meet the needs of the people. So if the Office of the Auditor General is going to be emphatic to keep the accounting officers, those who execute at the level of service delivery, so that the effectiveness of such farm is felt by the people on the ground. That's why we value the actual audit, which gets into auditing performance, because there's no use to get into the financial effect without getting into the actual broad outcome of those fiscal related reports. And it was very clear in the current outcome, which the Auditor General has outlined in as far as the PFMA is concerned. If you look into the examples that he has indicated, mainly those departments which ought to deliver services, how they at times lag behind to make that impact. And they're looking into the actual context of the quantum of such financial accountability, which is located at 60% as a basis of assessment in as far as credible financials, credible outcomes, which is going up to 74% overall. So indeed, we do appreciate that the work of the Office of the Auditor General begins to sting where it matters most at the level of performance. And it begins to indicate how the resource package of the country is leveled into the basis of accountability, where those who are supposed to deal with those services, they dig deeper in terms of ensuring that there's that success. Where we have to get into is to the level of ensuring that the response thereof is a reputable response. That's why we must receive that input on the MIs. And the AG is committed to getting back to us. We're going to afford them that date, which is going to be early in the start of the new year, as we're closing sometime in the next week or so. So the first interaction that we're going to have with the Office of the Auditor General is going to be on the MI process, which itself is indicative of the application of the Public Audit Act as reviewed, which is happily begins to make that a kind of effect. The last thing which one would want to appreciate is the fact that the Office of the Auditor General ought not to remain behind in as far as the ethical conduct is concerned. If you look into the strategy, they emphasize that point, something which you must appreciate, because the primacy of existence of that office is the observance of that culture of accountability, the observance of the ethical conduct, and at the same time, to ensure that in repute, that office would always be exemplary at all times. So we really appreciate the AG, what you are setting in a pace of wanting to ensure that the country moves towards such an observation. And you might, if you realize, instill a sense in the entirety of the public service that those who receive the funds must remain accountable for such, and they ought to act appropriately in ensuring that we succeed in all those areas which are supposed to be primarily the areas of service delivery. So in appreciation, in addition to honorable members' comments on these matters, one would want to say the office, if it's well oiled or technological wise, it is even going to do better in such instances. Our push would remain on the resourcing, and if we indeed have that in mind, we somewhat be primarily involved in pushing other sections of the state to pay for such services, and the Treasury to get into party in as far as such financing is concerned. And we really want to see this office remaining independent, but with its own independence, it must somewhat be honored by being so self-sufficient in a number of ways. So, colleagues, in as far as the strategy is concerned, we say we do appreciate that we have been briefed for over time, and therefore we accept the level of how the AG looks into its own vision, look into its own mission, look into its own practicality, and fund for those actions going forward. That's what you have said. Secondly, that on the areas of financing, we'll work with the AG to ensure that proper financing observation of payment for the services is somewhat taken into consideration. And thirdly, we'll be able to encourage the fact that this office operates within the mandate that it has to fulfill through this strategic intent, which we fully support, and our basis for that support for the Office of the Auditor General would be ensuring that this strategy succeeds. With that in mind, is there any other thing that would want to think lags behind in terms of our own input? I take it that we have reached the stage of one in agreement with the areas that have been put in front of us, where we level the factor of a fast movement towards technology. And if then that is the case, my comments are the comments which are getting closer into closing this meeting. Keep on the good work, and for the accolades that you receive, we hope that they are going to continue
to be creeping in. Thank you very much, AG. Work comfortably within the frame and the scope of your strategy going forward. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much,
honourable members.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.
Thank you, Chair. Hey, Tatana Chauke.
Who didn't stop?